Hey guys, thank you so much for joining me on this special edition of the Zeke's Guy podcast. I am making this the day after the election of Donald Trump. I just wanted to remind anyone who listens to the podcast that my last podcast was on July 14th, and since then I've released two albums, almost three albums, but two albums for sure since then. They are out on Spotify. Go give them a stream under the name Zeke's Guy. When I was finishing my degree in philosophy at the University of Maryland, I took a two-level course about political philosophy that was run by a very interesting professor who wanted us to get a grand historical view of things. And one of the books that was on the reading list was Will Durant's The Story of Civilization. And Will Durant is a historian and philosopher who everyone should know about, who wrote in the middle 1920s and 1910s. He was an admirer of philosophers, but he was also, by training, a historian. And I read some of it in college. I read parts of it that kind of intrigued me. The one thing that really stood out about the preface to the book was that in the preface to the book, Will Durant gave the nod to monarchies. He favored monarchies over democracies by a little bit, just a small amount. But if you continue through the book, you get to this quote eventually. Quote, "All forms of government destroy themselves by carrying their basic principle to excess. The first form is monarchy, whose principle is unity of rule. Carried to excess, the rule is too unified. A monarch takes too much power. The aristocracy, whose main principle is that selected families rule, can be carried to excess, and somewhat large numbers of able men are left out. And the middle classes join them in rebellion, and they establish what is called a democracy, whose principle is liberty. Then, says Plato, that principle, too, is carried to the excess in the course of time. The democracies become too free, in politics, in economics, in morals, even in literature and art, until at last, even the puppy dogs in our homes rise on their hind legs and demand their rights. Then disorder grows to such a point, and here's the history of the last 25 years, that a society will abandon all its liberty to anyone who can restore the order. And then monarchy may be restored, and the process begins all over again. Plato concluded that until philosophers become kings, or until kings become philosophers, states will not cease to suffer from the ills." End quote. Let's point out the obvious first here. Writing in the 1920s, if Durant was talking about people being vulnerable to the whims and ambitions of a potential dictator, it was what he witnessed in the world in the first 20, 30 years of his life. It was too obvious to ignore. So when he says there that disorder grows until a void is created for a dictator, he's not historically inaccurate, and he might have been seen as prescient given some of the dynamics that have defined politics, especially in our country, in the last 20 or 30 years. Now, a lot of times in political science and in history, we talk about the cycle of empires, but sometimes what we miss is the cycle of governments, the way he points it out, that a certain amount of freedom leads to a disorder that gains traction for increasingly dictatorial policies. Now, I'm not here to suggest that that's what happened in this election, because I don't think that that's what happened in this election. It could be that there are dynamics that allow for freedom to be on one side and order to be on the other side. And you could think of potentially truth tellers and order bringers as being two totally separate people. But there is one thing that I want to make today's podcast about, and it's important to me because I think when we read a historian like that who speaks with such certitude and writes with such certitude, we wonder, what is the source material for this? Where is this written? And we can find examples all over history that would both justify monarchy and justify the aristocracy and justify democracies. I mean, certainly looking at the evolution of politics and of freedoms and of leadership and of rule in Europe from the year 1000 to the year 2000, what we notice is that certainly monarchy is every bit a gamble as democracy. There are occasionally kings who are raised with the silver spoon, people like Charlemagne, who not a lot is known about Charlemagne's childhood, but Charlemagne is understood to be a great unifier of Europe and a great leader, even though he couldn't even read. It's something that we forget a lot of the times. Sometimes the leadership class doesn't have the traditional learning that we consider to be important in our leadership, but still they're able to lead, which is an interesting dynamic to point at. But today I want to talk about the example of the shortcomings of democracy that outlines so much and projects and telegraphs so much of where the Western world went. And it's an ancient story. Wouldn't you know it? It's the Zeke Sky podcast. And I'm going to take you in my time machine to 2,400 years ago, 2,500 years ago. And in the time that I'm going to talk about, the Greeks and the Persians are just starting to butt heads. And the Persians, who are eventually going to launch ships and launch full-scale invasions of Greece before the Greeks come back 200 years later and take it to Persia proper, well, there is a beginning to that story. And the beginning of the story of the Persians conquering Greece and burning Athens to the ground, which is something that happens. Athens is eventually sacked, and Athens is the birthplace of all these things we consider traditionally Western philosophical, so that's important to remember. But before the Persian Wars break out, and a chief cause of them breaking out on the scale that they did was their treatment, the Persians' treatment, of some of these Ionian city-states, some of these places that were Greek, but were ruled over by Persians and owed tribute to the Persian. We're allowed to do whatever they wanted in their civilization as long as they paid their taxes. But one of these places, a place called Miletus, rebels against the Persian rule. Now, the son of the former tyrant of this Miletus place is a guy called Aristagoras. And in this story, Aristagoras is like a sales guy. He's selling the greatest feeling in the world to the rest of the Greeks. And that greatest feeling in the world is uniting and defeating this Persian threat that has now presented itself. And his first mission, this Aristagoras, his first idea is to go to a people called the Spartans. Now, we've talked about the Spartans on my podcast. They're a popular cultural element. They've been romanticized in movies. I want to point out something immediately about the Spartans that I think is underappreciated. The Spartans are no doubt a great warrior people. We shouldn't walk that back. What we do need to understand is that their political dynamics are not something that we would recognize today, especially considering what the nature of warrior-like people are today. They tend to be expansionist. The Spartans were not expansionists. They loved their sacred ground, they loved their people, and they probably even had a fair bit of loyalty to Greeks that they saw as being related to themselves. But you have to remember, in this time that I'm going to talk about, you know, 2,400 years ago, 2,500 years ago, there is no Greece. There is no shared sense of cultural identity. And I think that this is something that maybe we miss a lot of the time, because in the United States, where we are, the thing that unites us is not shared lineage. It's shared values, right? It's stuff like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution. That's the thing that gives us the girth of community here. In ancient Greece, it's not values at all. It's literally just blood. That's the only thing that they have to hold on to, which really shows that you that in some ways, water can be very much thicker than blood. These Greek city-states have all different ways of living. Some of them like monogamy, some of them like, you know, other styles of marriage and other styles of sexual relationships. They drink differently. People like the Macedonians will drink to a stupor with unmixed wine, where the Athenians are a little bit, let's mix it with some water, is what they would tell you. So while they don't have a shared sense of values, they have a shared sense of heritage, and this can be powerful at times. Now, that's crucial to this story, because what I want to talk about today is democracy, and democracy is a value that this country, and a dynamic that this country has put on a pedestal. And both sides in this country seem to agree that democracy is a good thing. And I'm not here to tell you democracy isn't a good thing. I'm here to tell you that there is a long-standing debate about what the effects of actual democracies are. Okay? And I think that there's no doubt that what you can say of democracies is that the applied policies and the political philosophies of the governing bodies that are subject to constituencies tend to reflect the will of the people that voted for them. And that can be good or that can be bad. Simply put, today, let's hear about this. Let's hear about Aristagoras goes to the Spartans and he says, come save us. Come save the Ionian Greeks. We're your cousins. We're your second cousins. Please help us. And the Spartan king, the Spartans had two kings, one of them, I guess you would call this guy the heir and not the spare, Cleomenes, says, I'm going to think about this, but I'm not sure. And this guy, Cleomenes, is the king. He has the executive decision. He can decide to take the Spartans to war. He can decide to not take them to war. He can decide to take them to go find Atlantis, or he can say, we're just fighting over our sacred ground. So he thinks about this, and then the next day, Aristagoras comes back and asks Cleomenes if he can take the Spartans to go throw off the Persians. And the Spartan king says, how long would it be for us to march from where we are now in Sparta, in the south of Greece, to Miletus, or to Persia? And Aristagoras tells him the truth, and he says it would take about 90 days. And Cleomenes says, get out of here. I'm not taking my men to march 90 days to go fight in a battle. We don't have power projection like that, which was true. And he figured it out very quick that he didn't want to be a part of this war. So Aristagoras goes to, you guessed it, Athens. He goes to Athens, where there is a democracy. And Aristagoras goes with his clever sales plan right to Athens, and he says, these are all the good things you'll get for three easy payments of $9.99. And if you do all of this and you go fight the Persians, you will win back all this honor. Oh, and by the way, you'll also be the richest people in the world because you'll be beating the richest people in the world. Sound familiar? You will be treating your brethren as if they were closer to you than you actually are. And this will be just a wonderful, glory-filled moment. And the Athenian crowd likes this. They like being here told about three easy payments of $9.99 and all the good stuff that they're going to get. And they decide, we're going to send ships to go fight the Persians. And they send five ships against the Persians, who have hundreds of ships in the area. So needless to say, that is squashed. And all of Greece is dragged into a war that becomes personal for the king of Persia, who decides that he needs to burn Athens to the ground, needs to burn Athens to the ground so much he has a slave remind him every night, my lord, do not forget the Athenians. So what does this tell us about democracies? It tells you what I said a moment ago, that the constituencies will eventually guide the policies if it is a true reflective democracy. And that can be good or that can be bad. And we need to understand that there is no remorse. There cannot be any remorse about what the actual outcome is. If you are philosophically in favor of democracy, you believe in the result for the sake of it being the result. Both sides in this election talked about how it was important to restore democracy. It was a question that pollsters asked all over the place. I don't recall that being in other polls and other elections. Both sides wanted to restore democracy, apparently. One side got their way. The other side didn't. Or so they tell you. Because if you believe the vote that happened yesterday was real, it's only a victory. But we know, as people, and as Will Durant just said, that there is a life cycle of democracies. There's a life cycle of empire, of government. And what keeps people up at night is not knowing that the wrong person is in the White House, but simply thinking that they might be caught up in the cogs of the wheel that's spinning towards oblivion.